You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When he learned that both of his grandfathers, one Turkish and one Irish, had been imprisoned during World War II, Joseph O'Neill decided to investigate. The result was a book called Blood Dark Track, A Family History, which was a New York Times notable selection when it was published in 2001. He was on our show back in October to discuss the book, which had just been released in a paperback edition, and listeners told us how much they enjoyed that conversation, so we thought we would play it for you again today. I began by asking Joseph O'Neill, did you write this before you were working on Netherland, the novel that brought you here the last time and got you all of those awards?
Well, I don't know if it got me that many awards.
Well, the 2009 Penn Faulkner was not bad.
Well, absolutely. I'm very grateful for that, obviously. Yeah, this book is the result of 5 years of research, or indeed 6 years of research, which I started in 1995 and finished in about 2000. And the research essentially consisted of, on the one hand, an investigation into the story of my grandfathers, and on the other hand, a sort of a crash course in obscure history, which practically all history is obscure, was obscure to me. So that took 5 years.
Well, you have an odd background. You were born in Cork, Ireland, if I remember correctly. You grew up primarily in Holland, but mm-hmm. also in Mozambique, South Africa, Iran, Turkey. Were all of those different homes connected in any way to the circumstances of your family's history?
Well, I mean,
I do see Turkey and Ireland there.
Yes. I mean, what happened is my father, who's a Corkman through and through, freckles everywhere, went when he was a young man to Turkey to help build a refinery. And there he met my mother, who is Turkish and belonged to a small French-speaking Christian minority that lived in this town called Mersin. And very improbably, they got married. And it was actually quite a comic thing in a way, because my mother's father, my Turkish grandfather, who was the subject, one of the subjects of this book, had to write to the parish priest in Ireland for a reference. and then the parish priest wrote back saying, yes, you know, Kevin O'Neill comes from an excellent family. Whereas what he might have written was that my father, in common with practically all of his relations, at that time had been involved in Irish republicanism, and the family was in fact reputable only in those circles.
Were you aware of any of these stories before 1995?
Only as vague, misty rumors, and indeed vague, misty silences. I wasn't. My father was only very briefly involved in the Republican struggle, as it's called, mm-hmm. and he certainly moved on and moved away and, you know, left Ireland.
Well, these are not stories that most families are going to boast about.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, one of the great traditions of Republican activity is the tradition of silence and discretion. And it's only now, essentially, that we're beginning to see stories, only in the last 10 years, that we're beginning to see stories about events that occurred in the 1930s and 50s.
Did you know either of your grandfathers?
No.
So, but your grandmothers were alive.
My grandmothers were alive, and my Turkish grandfather died actually the day before I was born, and my Irish grandfather died in the early 1970s, and I had met him, but I had no memories of him. And so I had to, so that these men, my Irish grandfather had been imprisoned by the Irish authorities during the Second World War because he was an IRA man, and the Irish authorities were worried that the IRA might perpetrate acts of violence against the British, and that the British might have to invade Ireland.
There was strong anti-British sentiment in Ireland, wasn't there?
Oh, there was.
Some people were even supporting the German cause.
Well, I mean, that's one of the sort of sensitive issues of Irish history, is the degree to which not only the Irish Republicans, who had this mantra that England's enemy is my is my friend, essentially. But the Irish authorities themselves, I mean, neutrality in the Second World War was obviously a prudent thing to do, but it raises certain questions.
Well, was he put in prison because of something he did that was directly connected to the war?
No. I mean, it was internship. It was sort of Guantanamo Bay. I mean, what they did is they simply rounded up all known or suspected Republicans and kept them locked up for 4 or 5 years so that they wouldn't cause any trouble. And simultaneously and coincidentally, my Turkish grandfather went from Turkey to Palestine to buy 200 tons of lemons, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because there was a shortage, and that was his business.
Well, you know, he belonged to this Syrian Christian community, and whenever there's money to be made, they can sniff it out.
But he was accused of perhaps being a German spy.
That's right. He was accused of being a spy or of use to the Germans, and of course Turkey was also neutral at that time. But when he went to Palestine on this business trip, he was entering British jurisdiction, and it seemed, and I, by various miraculous flukes, I managed to track down some of the people, the British diplomats who were around in this little town in Turkey, and it seems that the British authorities in Turkey notified their counterparts in Palestine that this was a German sympathizer and should be locked away.
And wasn't he?
It's unlikely, I think. What he certainly was, I think, stubbornly neutral. His main business was running a hotel, and this hotel was visited by a man called von Papen, who was the German ambassador. And my grandfather even accompanied him on a road trip. And he had no worries about appearing to be, publicly associating with Germans.
But you're saying this is really guilt by association.
Well, I think it is guilt by association.
Well, was he just there in Palestine to buy lemons?
That's it. Yeah.
And that's what he told them.
Well, what happened is I didn't know anything about this story, and before I'd even decided to write this book, I was in my grandmother's attic in Turkey, and I was looking for flippers and snorkels, and I found this old document, and it was like something out of a children's story, and I looked at it, and it was my Turkish grandfather's account of what had happened to him, and he went through the whole series of events in great detail, and the town he describes is a lot like Casablanca. It's this port in a neutral country, sort of teeming with spies and intrigue, most of it utterly ineffectual, obviously. Like a lot of so-called intelligence work, a lot of it is fantastical and pointless. And
what was he writing this down for? Did he imagine that he would publish it as a book?
Or No. It was actually a kind of a claim. He was writing to the Turkish government. He felt the Turkish government had handed him over to the British as well, because they wouldn't have dared to do this without cooperation from the Turkish government. Excuse me. And that raised the question in my mind of the status of the minorities in Turkey, which in turn raised the question eventually, as I sort of followed my grandfather's life, of the Armenians. And he was a bystander to that atrocity as well.
What is the current status of the Christian sect that he was a member of? Are there many still in Turkey?
No, they're declining in numbers. Not, I think, out of any sense of oppression, but out of a sense of better opportunities elsewhere. And also, they're becoming extremely assimilated. I mean, my Christian cousins are marrying Muslim spouses, and so that particular identity is now fading.
You found a letter from Joseph Descartes to the British, but it was never sent.
Yes, and he came back from his horrifying experiences of internment, during which, according to his document, he'd been tortured and all the rest of it, and led to believe that he was going to be executed and subjected to the sorts of things which are familiar to anyone who knows about these things. And it was in his mind to claim compensation for wrongful imprisonment and all the rest of it, but he was advised just to forget about it and to try and lead his life. And eventually that's what he did. He just put it behind him and got on with his life.
Back in Ireland, you talk about your uncle Brandon. Why was he more helpful than your father?
Well, my father was helpful, but Brendan, his my uncle Brendan, who's a very close friend of mine, was much more involved in the Republican movement than my father was, and was much closer to my Irish grandfather, and also felt, I think, that the history, the secret history of Irish Republican activity, simply hadn't been told. And I think he was anxious to let me know what he'd gone through.
Was your grandfather involved in criminal activities? There's the whole matter of the murder of Vice Admiral Henry Somerville.
Yes. What happened is that I went with Brendan, my uncle Brendan, to the old family farmhouse in West Cork. And Brendan went into the house where my cousin Pat O'Neill lives. And I stayed in the car, and he emerged a few minutes later with a towel in his hands. And he entered the car, and he dropped the towel on my lap, and I felt something heavy in the folds of the towel, and I opened it, and it was a Colt, it was a revolver. And Brendan looked at me and said, "That's the gun that shot Admiral Somerville." Mm. Now, the killing of Admiral Somerville is a very controversial episode in Irish history, and is still the subject of, no one quite knows what happened. But I looked into it, and it seems that members of my family were involved, and that after the shooting took place, they dropped the gun at the family farm and kept going from there.
We want to be proud of our family's histories. Was it hard to come to terms with some of the things that you uncovered?
Well, I think that, you have mixed feelings about it. You have, on the one hand, enormous empathy and love for your family, but on the other hand, obviously, it's a little disturbing to consider what deeds were done. But of course, I don't feel any personal guilt or anything. But in fact, one of the great sort of objectives of this book is to attempt to approach questions of political violence as rationally as possible. And because it's political violence isn't perpetrated rationally usually.
Your literary career is interesting. You start off with two comic novels. Then you wrote two works of nonfiction, including this one, and then Netherland, which got a lot of attention, and I assume has led you back to writing fiction, or are you going to go back to nonfiction?
Well, I mean, I'm going to stay with fiction. I mean,
So you're working on another novel?
Yes. It's simmering rather than boiling over, and that'll take a while, I fear. Yes, I mean, Blood Dark Track is my one work of nonfiction, and it's a novelistic sort of book as well. It's not written by a scholar. I'm not learned in any of these things. I'm only learned in the matter of my family, and in the matter of what my thoughts are about them. And so, I use a novelist prerogative to look into all these things.
What was the reaction of members of your family to this book?
I have to say,
did they see you as airing dirty laundry?
Not at all. They disagreed with me, some of them, because I do express certain opinions. But I have to say that I was very pleasantly surprised at how fairly they thought I'd written about everybody, and in a way, I was a lawyer for many years. And I am aware that justice is often a question of detail, and a question of not speculating. And I think that I didn't misrepresent them, and so to that extent, it was a pretty fair job.
Blood Dark Track, the title meaning?
Well, it's a quote from Yeats, and I bitterly regret this title, because it's impossible to pronounce, particularly if you've got my accent in this country, where I keep saying it's Blood Dark Track, and people say, excuse me, and I have to go Blood Dark Track. But it's a quote from a snippet from a phrase from a Yeats poem. If anyone has any better suggestions for a better title.
You want a new title now?
Absolutely. All suggestions are welcome.
Well, we've talked in the past about how many title changes Netherland went through before you finally came up with that one.
I know. It's a good title can make a big difference to a book. It really can. And that's why I'm slightly worried about the title of this book.
It's too late now.
It is.
It's a matter of record. It was published in 2001.
Well, I'm looking at the jacket, and my publisher's done a very good job of actually making the book appear as if it has no title at all.
Well, it looks like the title that I see on this new vintage paperback is Joseph O'Neill.
Yes.
Joseph O'Neill's Blood Dark Track, A Family History, is now available as a vintage paperback. And if you enjoyed Netherland, as so many of us have, I think you're going to enjoy this one as well. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.